Hello and welcome to the second episode of Hot Air in 2018. My name is Greg Esser. Lots of news has been hitting the internet about the 2018 AUDL season. Really exciting stuff. The Breeze have spearheaded that push for more news. They've got a new website launch, thedcbreeze.com. It looks really sharp. It's got a lot of great information. Two things in particular, a full roster is now available. It just came out. I'm not ready to talk about it yet, but I promise to get an episode that talks through that full roster in some more depth before opening day, which is on April 7th against the Montreal Royale. The reason I know that, of course, is because that other big announcement is the full schedule for the Breeze this year is out. And I do want to talk about that a little bit. Pretty interesting schedule. Two cross-division games for the Breeze. I believe they're the only team in the AUDL that's doing that in 2018. And both of those interdivisional games, or I guess extra-divisional games outside the division, are against playoff teams from 2017. I think that's pretty interesting, particularly within the Eastern Division, that the Breeze are doing that, because, as we know, playoff teams based on your regular season record, and the Breeze have a harder regular season schedule. There's an uphill battle this year to make that play, to get that same playoff spot. Or should the Breeze make the playoffs, maybe they've got some more, you know, heated reps, some more harder reps under their belt. They can play bigger in crunch time. They've been there. They've faced the best already. Raleigh, an early favorite this year. They've been loading up on talent. And the Breeze are going to get a crack against them in the regular season, just as they did last year. And the reason that I mentioned that strength of schedule bit is that other teams around the Eastern Division really just don't have as hard of a schedule. And I find it interesting. And we're going to see how it plays out. New York does play Toronto three times, as the Breeze do, but they don't have the cross-divisional play. Montreal, again, no interdivisional play, no cross-divisional play, even though they do play Toronto and New York three times, as the Breeze do. Philly, very interesting, they only play Toronto twice, and they do get into the cross-divisional play against Pittsburgh as well, but they don't have that tough Raleigh game on the schedule. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out. You know, one win and one loss is a big deal in the AUDL, only 14 games in the regular season. I've been panning through that schedule. Very interested to see how it kind of plays out. Tough road ahead for the 2018 season, I guess, is my short recap. I've got an interview with Nathan Pryor on tap today, and I'm very excited for that. He displayed great poise last year coming up, fighting for playing time once he was getting regular playing time, displaying even more poise and in a different way. Very reliable with the disc, completing nearly 200 passes. I kind of butcher that question when I ask him. He completed 200 passes before throwing a turnover. So quite an exceptional performance out of him. And then finished the season with over 300 passes completed and a 97% completion percentage. Yeah, I talked to him a little bit about his mentality, how he maintains that play style, what goes through his head. So I will quickly get to that interview. Before I begin, let me go through our 2018 sponsors. Big thanks for making the DC Breeze possible for Papa John's Pizza, Port City Brewing Company, Oak Creek Apparel, Spectrum Management, and Murphy's Grill at Catholic University. That's going to be our game day stop this year, that bar, and very excited for all that. Very excited to go to Murphy's Grill. Without further ado, let's turn it over to Broke Royals with our intro music. Check.
Okay, check.
Great, yeah, if you can keep that volume, that'd be wonderful.
Perfect.
Louder even.
Perfect.
Yeah, great. cool, so I am sitting here with Nathan, old reliable, 2-on-7 prior. Nathan, Nate, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, it's great to be here.
Cool, well, so you just got done tryouts, so you might be a little fatigued, but I'm going to make you bring the energy here for episode 2 of Hot Air in 2018.
I'll be ready.
Perfect. The first question I'll ask you, and this is the easy preseason question, is how's your offseason been? You know, this is, last year was the first year you played pro, and so you're coming back for more, but there was an offseason that occurred between. Did that, you know, how did that influence your offseason, and what'd you do? Disney World?
Not quite. Didn't make it to Disney World, but the off-season was great. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. I actually just started a new job this week, so that's been exciting. Never a dull moment for the off-season, but I take sort of a bit of an unconventional approach ultimate-wise. I really don't play at all. The pro season, the club season, lasts a long time. It's about 6 months.
Or more, yeah.
Yeah, and so I have experienced a little bit of burnout in the past, both after high school and after college, and so using those lessons, I've decided when the off-season comes, I'm not playing any Frisbee. I'm just going, doing other things. I'm staying in shape.
So you're augmenting with other sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been playing pickup basketball, pickup soccer, just running, and then obviously lifting as well. But yeah, the first Breeze tryout was the first time I had touched a disc in about 5 months, I think.
What's your best trick shot in basketball?
Oh man, I'm not a shooter at all. I'm a slash and kick guy. If you give it to me behind the 3-point line, I'm not putting it up. Kind of like ultimate. I'm just moving it.
Okay, yeah. Oh, there. Yeah. The style translates.
Yeah, it definitely does. Pretty much all sports, I'm the same player.
Yeah. So you mentioned it, correlating to your ultimate style is kind of like the move the ball, complete the pass, and that's spot on in it. So my next line of questioning is, so last year, your first, I think it was nearly 200 throws, you didn't throw a completion. So let me ask you, how you think that play style has developed, and then what's going through your head when you've got a streak as monumentous as that going on?
Yeah, so not to correct you right off the bat, but I didn't throw an incompletion. Definitely threw completion.
Oh, sorry.
No, not at all. Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, I had over 100 or so, almost 200 straight completions. As far as what's going through my head, I'm really just trying to play ultimate. I'm not really thinking about, I need to keep this streak going. I'm just trying to move it to the next guy, keep it moving, keep the offense flowing. It does correspond nicely to my play style in general and just how I think about ultimate and how I think about offense.
Yeah, so give me the insight into that. How do you think about ultimate, that is this completion-heavy focus?
Yeah, so my thought is the disc moves faster than the player, and so if you can just keep the disc moving, hit the first open guy, and then keep running, keep moving, the defense is going to have so much trouble keeping up. And so I really strive for that in my game, of just keep hitting the open guy and letting the offense work from there. We have so many amazing dynamic playmakers on the Breeze. So last year we had Tyler Monroe, Rowan, Max Castle,
the downfield guys, kind of.
Yeah.
And those guys, yeah.
Exactly. Those guys were the ones that were throwing us the big throws. So if I can just get it into their hands, I'll be doing my job for the offense. And then as far as the handler set, we also had Alan Kolick and Lloyd Blake, who were amazing with the disc, both in terms of hucking and just moving it side to side. So I played more of a complementary role. So that definitely helped in that regard of not throwing turnovers. If I'm throwing turnovers, I really shouldn't be out there, because it's not like I'm adding much on the defensive end anyway.
Your fear of turnovers stems from a resistance or a dislike of playing D?
Yeah, absolutely. I hate playing D, and so I need to make sure I'm not the reason we're turning it over.
I love it.
I'm not going to be playing much at all.
So that's interesting, though. You mentioned kind of, put it into, you mentioned a trifecta of big cutters downfield, big initiators, and they're putting up the big looks. I mean, there's certainly not a lack of capability in a backfield that's got, particularly, you mentioned Lloyd Blake or a Markham Schaffner, able to put up those big throws. But do you think there's something conscious about the system of the Breeze that you're attacking out of the initiator cut versus the handler?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. We definitely try to give a lot of space, regardless of what offensive set we're running. And we have a couple different sets that we'll try to pull out and try to change it up to keep the defense honest. But all of them involve isolating players out in space. And some of our best throwers, or at least huckers, are from that cutting space. You mentioned Rowan and Tyler. I think those are probably two of the better examples, Max as well. And so as a handler, my mindset is just, if I can get the disc upfield and get the handlers out of the play, our cutters are going to have so much room to work with. And I know Daryl tries to design sets, regardless of how they're starting, tries to design sets that sort of get our big dogs out in space, because they're really hard to guard when we let them go.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So I think part of your success in that distribution, tons of completion role, certainly if I hearken back to your playing days at Maryland, was based on what I've heard referred to as a dynamic duo. By your side at Maryland, you had Davis and Girard, and the two of you, it's been described, could just walk down the field throwing back and forth to each other without almost breaking stride and, you know, confusing the defense. And there was something in that that was your maybe deception, but deceptive to everyone but each other. There was a chemistry between the two of you. So let me ask you, how do you think you developed that? And then if there is a player on the Breeze that you are starting to establish that type of chemistry with, or, I mean, talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I could talk about Davidson for hours, so it depends on how much time you have. But he actually just moved to St. Louis, so I'm very sad. We'll have to go bring him back, maybe. Have a mission to kidnap and take him back to D.C.
A nondescript white van rolls up. Okay, I'm in.
But yeah.
I've got a good wheel, man.
Playing with him in college was amazing. I think partly college helps in that regard because you have so much time together. At Maryland, we practiced usually 4 days a week for 2 hours of practice, and then throw in tournaments on top of that and weekend practices occasionally. There's just so much time to be able to develop chemistry and figure out where somebody wants to disc, what cuts they can throw, what cuts they want to hit. And Davidson just had such a great mindset, sort of like a sixth sense in being able to feed people exactly how they want it. And so we had, yeah, like you said, a really positive pairing in that regard. He's one of the only people who can just shut me down no matter what I'm trying to do. He knows exactly what I want to do.
Like looking into a mirror.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it's good that he moved, but
yeah,
I
have never, I mean, I guess there's some old college footage I've seen, but outside that footage, I've never seen you both in person in the same place. So you might be the same person.
Maybe. I guess the move would help with that. Yeah. And then,
so talk to me then about, you know, if that chemistry is so powerful, are you on your way to developing it with anyone on the Breeze or anyone's play style that you think is so compatible?
Yeah, I think it's tougher on the Breeze just because of a lack of time. We're usually only practicing once a week for 2 or 3 hours. And so you just don't have the reps with somebody in the practice to know, okay, I know you want it exactly like this. So you have to figure it out on the fly a little bit more. But there are certainly players that I love playing with. And I think more than anything, I think our styles are very compatible. So I talked about it earlier, but Zach Norbaum is one guy who I think plays pretty much the exact same style as me. He's just a little quicker, a little better looking.
Zach Norbaum, a guy near and dear to my heart. He played Breeze back when I did.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I admire his play style so much.
The youngest veteran in the league.
Yeah. He'll always hit the open guy, and he's always moving. And so as a handler, to play with somebody like that, there's always just so many looks available to you because people are constantly in motion. You can fake one way, throw it the other way. So he's a guy that I love playing with, and I think our styles are very compatible. And then the other handlers, too, that I've played with. I guess I talk mostly about handlers because those are who we work with the most. But I love playing with Alan Kolick because he's the same way. He's always moving. He always seems to just find the
right spaces.
Unfortunately,
out with an injury this year.
Yeah. And then David Bloodgood, he makes throws that just I have no idea how he puts it there. His lefties.
Any uninjured players? Because Bloodgood's also out for the season.
Oh, yeah. I guess I should have thought about that more. Well, Lloyd, too. Lloyd's
okay, Lloyd can be your bronze medal.
Yeah, Lloyd's so easy to play with because he has every throw. It's impossible to mark him because he's so tall and really has everything. And so I kind of end up playing the more facilitator reset role when he's on the field. And I just need to make sure that I can, you know, get open, stall 4, stall 5, 6, because if there's any throw in front of him, he's going to hit it. So I'm kind of there as sort of like a safety valve. And so he's amazing to play with in that regard and really drives our offense forward.
Yeah. So let me ask you about kind of another little, at least a storyline that kind of went through my head about you in 2017, which is at the beginning of the season, you weren't always getting regular reps. By the end of the season, you were a key cog in the O-line. So talk to me a little bit about that transformation, and then maybe advise someone who might be in a similar role on their local team, what should be their approach maybe to making a similar move within playing time within the squad.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we started with the Breeze last year, I think we had a little over 30 people, maybe 31, 32, and so there was a lot of figuring out roles and figuring out where everybody fits within the team construct. And I was in a bit of an unfamiliar place at the start of last season. I have really been an offensive-minded player most of my career. And so on the Breeze, last year I was in a more defensive handler spot.
Yeah.
So that was an unfamiliar role for me. And so I was trying to really improve my skills and find where I could be a value add on the team. And we had an amazing D-line, and so I didn't necessarily get too much playing time the first 8 games of the season. But I still wanted to make sure I was being a good teammate and really putting in the work at practice to show that I deserve to be on the field and I want to help the team win. I think that's always tough as a competitive person. You want to be out there, you want to be helping the team. But I just needed to keep bringing that intensity. And eventually we had an opening on the offensive line where my skills would be a little more valuable, I guess. And so I was able to carve out a little niche there, mostly just feeding the other handlers, feeding the cutters downfield. And it worked out well at the end of the season.
So there's something interesting about your description, I think, which is, so you probably could have verbally said, you know, hey, you know, D-line's probably not my best fit role. D-line's not what I, you know, and been able to also identify what the ideal role for you would have been. But I imagine, I mean, there's a good communication link with you and the coaches. You've talked about it before with me. But I imagine that your number one way to go get that is not to sit down with a pen and paper and the coaches and talk it all out. You know, how do you go about getting that without, because I mean, knocking on the coach's door is probably not going to just win you the playing time and the role you desired.
Yeah, that's definitely not really my style. I'm more behind this, laying low in that regard. I'm not really one to complain about my role or anything like that.
Sure.
Because I think the coaches, to their credit, have open communication with all the players of what they need to see in order to get you on the field. And so for me, I had to improve my defense or whatever it might be. But I knew there was a set path for me to find more playing time and be able to contribute and help the team. And that's really to their credit. And I think that was really helpful for me to be able to see a path forward of, I played one out of, I think, the first 8 games, but I knew if I just keep improving, they're not going to be able to keep me off the field. And so that was my mindset. And I guess when you mention sort of advice to other players in a similar situation, I would say that's the mindset to take into it. Take it as a challenge. It's not that you're never going to be good enough to help the team or be on the field. You need to improve X, Y, or Z. Improve these skills, and then you'll be in a position to help the team. And that's if you approach it with that mindset, I think growth is so much more attainable. Because you have a roadmap ahead. And that was sort of the approach I used. But yeah, I'm not really one to knock on Daryl's door and have a heart-to-heart with them. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's an option too, I guess.
Yeah, you've got to have concrete action. It's not just about the bluster with the coaches.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A little bit of a stretch, but that's a Breeze pun. Those also play on hot air. Tell me then, so we talked a lot about last year, but obviously we're sitting in the driver's seat for this year. Tell me a little bit what you're most excited about in 2018, schedules out, which team, let's start off with. What teams are the interdivisional games, what games are you most excited for this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I think about this coming year and what I'm most excited about, it's got to start with Toronto, the team that knocked us out last year.
Sure.
We lost to them twice in Toronto.
And beat them twice here.
Yeah.
So it was ups and downs.
Yeah, we need to get those playoff games at home this year. That'll be a big focus for us. But I think it's got to start with them. They sort of rule the East, and we're gunning for that seat. So I'm excited to figure out what we need to do to dethrone them. I've been thinking about that playoff game a lot in the offseason, what I can do personally to help the team get over that hump, whatever it might be, and then what we need to do as a team, what sets do we need to have to be able to combat Toronto, what personnel we're going to need on the team. And I think that's a big part of the tryout process is figuring out what sort of players we need on the team to be able to take down a really talented team in Toronto and the other talented teams across the East.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as the other teams, I think the interdivision play will be really exciting this year. We have two games, I think, Raleigh at home and Pittsburgh on the road.
You got it.
Yes, and I'm really excited for both of those games. I missed the Raleigh game last year because I was coaching at college regionals. And so to be able to be thrown in that environment against different players will be really exciting. I think both of those are groups of players I've played against a lot.
Sure.
Pittsburgh with Temper, and then Raleigh with Ring of Fire and University of North Carolina.
Sure, same college division as DC.
Yeah.
As Maryland, really.
Yeah. So definitely no strangers to them, but it'll be exciting to play in a different environment, in a different location.
What do you think about some of the news in New York that kind of loaded up a cutting-edge, hot-button issue here, that loaded up this week? Some of their talent's been starting to get released. It looks like Bo Kittredge might be in New York, Marquez Brownlee, a recent signee, in addition to the Jeff Babbitts, and we'll see if Ben Yacht plays again. What are your thoughts on New York loading up?
Yeah, it'll be exciting. I love playing New York. I think we had three games against them last year, and they were decided by a total of 5 points, maybe, 5 points or so. It's always a fun game when we play them, and so for them to, keep adding talent, it's going to be incredible. I've personally never played against Bo Kittredge before, so I can't really speak to much there. I'm sure he'll be a big help for their team. Marquez, I have played against. We were old high school rivals, so we've played each other for probably, I don't know, what is it, 10, 12 years now? So it'll be really exciting. And they're always a really fun team to play. We'll see.
Marquez Brownlee could be the opposite play style of you as well.
Yeah.
high turnover rates, but he's gunning for the end zone. Some big flashy plays, but you might be the more, certainly the on the conservative side of those things, but both getting it done in a very different fashion.
Yeah, I respect it a lot. When I dream on Marquez, basically. Slinging it downfield, skying people, getting huge Ds. Unfortunately, I have some physical limitations, so I can't really be doing all that stuff. But yeah, Marquez is great, and he's a tremendous guy.
I mean, on that note, I want to play a little game that I usually play on Hot Air. It's called Over Underrated. Alan Kolick may have broken the game by getting really into my head and into his head about what it truly means to be rated. I don't know if I'm ready for another iteration of this game yet. So if I go to a dark place, just pick me up.
So
the nature of the game is you need to kind of assess what's in the zeitgeist in terms of how is this thing rated? And then I want you to respond and think that, you feel that rating that exists about this item is either over or underrated.
Let's do it.
All right. Bar soap.
Oh, that is... Oh. I mean, overrated. I feel
like the society feels like it's fully gone to many people. The liquid soap, the loofah. Are you a bar soap user or are you a liquid soap guy?
Yeah, so to be honest, I'm not a huge soap guy in general.
No soap.
Yeah, I don't want to say no soap, but minimal soap for me. But yeah, bar soap seems pretty gross. I've never really used it. I shouldn't be the guy judging soaps, though, given my track record.
So just maybe over-underrated soap.
Yeah.
Soap is overrated. Overrated.
Yeah, water is good enough. But yeah, bar soap, definitely, definitely overrated.
Public transportation.
Oh, underrated. Yeah, I metro pretty much everywhere. I actually just got a car 2 months ago, but before that I was metroing, walking everywhere. I have sort of a reputation on the team.
As a walker?
Yeah, I will walk everywhere. But oftentimes I'll need to metro or bike share to get there, and then I walk from there.
Okay, so you use public transportation to augment your walking.
Yeah, definitely. And I metro to work every day. But yeah, I love walking too, but public transportation, underrated.
Breakthroughs.
Oh, way underrated. I don't understand why people throw open side. There's no defense on the break side. You should just be throwing it every time.
Sometimes there's a mark there.
Yeah, well, forget the mark. Push past it. Go to the break side. Yeah, I love break throws. Sometimes I think I probably just stare down the break side too much. When you have a player like Rowan on the open side, he's just going to get open every time. So there's not even any reason to look break side. But yeah, I love break throws. That's probably another thing that I'm known for on the team. But it's great. It's easy. There's no defense. It's perfect.
The restaurant, Chipotle.
Oh, I love Chipotle. I was actually just talking about this. So, underrated.
You're high on Chipotle.
Yeah. I was saying the other day that I think I could go a long time with only eating Chipotle.
That's very underrated, it seems like, Ben. That's a lot of Chipotle.
I don't know. I've never actually done it, but people say that you'd get sick of Chipotle. I'm sure I would eventually, but it'd be a while. So yeah, underrated. Chipotle's great.
There we go. Alright, well, thanks for playing Over Underrated. Those are all the topics I wanted to get through today with you. So with that said, you've got a hot mic in front of you, and I'm not going to stop you. Is there anything else you want to talk about, Ultimate related, not Ultimate related? Give people some insight into the man that is Nathan Pryor.
Oh man, putting me on the spot. I don't think there's too much.
You're just a shell of a man.
Yeah, maybe I should have do more interesting things. I'm going to Boston next weekend.
You're wearing a Boston shirt right now.
Yeah, traveling back to the homeland. I was born there. Lived there for I think like 6 years before moving. But
so you're a Boston sports fan.
Yeah, okay. those stuck. I'm going back for my brother's bachelor party, so it'll be.
There you go. You got a brother who's getting married.
Yeah,
that's a little something.
Yeah, getting married this summer. Yeah, very exciting. But yeah, I don't not much for me. I don't know. I'm excited to get this season started.
It's going to be a good season, I think.
Yeah.
It's a lot of competition. Great. We talked about the visits to Pittsburgh, Toronto, but then also Raleigh's going to come to town.
Excellent. Well, thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening in, and I will talk to you in 2 short weeks. Adios.